Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello, I'm Claire Mutimer.
And I'm Susie Coulson. Welcome to The Backstory. In each episode, we'll be hearing about an experience that has happened to someone that shaped who they are.
30 minutes that remind us that everyone's dealing with something. So we're a documentary podcast. A docupod.
Except you made that word up.
If you're listening to this on the day it's released, Christmas Day, then happy Christmas, if you do Christmas. Whether you're out with the dog, hiding upstairs, or having a break from the relatives, or whether you're just by yourself, we hope you're having a good enough day. It can be wonderful, and let's face it, it can be utterly crap. But one thing's for sure, it'll be over by tomorrow.
Today we're carrying on with our look at the backstories of people whose job it is to help others. A job can be many things: a way of earning money, a means of fulfilment, or a nightmare that plagues your every waking hour.
I think I've done all of those.
I think so too. Yeah. Sounds like a day here.
Yeah, exactly. Just all in one day. Nikki and Alan work for a housing charity that supports people at all stages of homelessness, including people who are rough sleeping and potentially leading very chaotic lives, through to people who are ready to move into independent living with the right support. This is hard work, physically and emotionally, with odd hours, and not the sort of salary that will have you reaching for the Bollinger. It's telling that throughout the interview, Nikki and Alan's focus is on their clients. They really don't dwell on the difficulties that they feel in doing their job. You have to listen out for the odd comment, but I do feel that this job does take its toll.
So I'm here at St Martin's Housing Trust with Nikki and Alan. Thank you both so much for having me here. We're here talking about your working life today. So is there a particular kind of event that stands out for either of you that you would like to tell us about today?
We probably might want to look at the story or the journey of John.
Okay, tell me about John.
So John first came into service possibly 3 years ago. He has subsequently been with us, I think, three, four times. And on each occasion, he has made more progress, culminating in a current situation where he's stable on his script. He's not using illicit substance. He's planning for his future, and he's doing extremely well.
How old is John?
I believe he's about 27.
So he was sort of early, mid-20s when he first came to you. Just take me back to when he first presented. What was going on with him at that stage?
Well, I'm going to suggest he was a chaotic illicit substance user, drug user.
Just give us a sense of what that actually looks like.
Street rough sleeper.
Okay.
Poor health.
Yeah.
Sleeping rough in what can only be described as dangerous environments.
We've had clients who are spat at, urinated on, thrown up on, have their belongings stolen, and just treated horrendously when it's a human being. This is someone's son, brother, husband, dad. It may be someone's wife, mother, sister, and they're being put in horrendously dangerous situations. I always laugh. The public always think they're at risk from the homeless, when in actual fact, it's totally the other way around. Our clients are more at risk from the general public.
Do you know how long John had been sleeping rough?
I would say probably a number of months, possibly a year or more. Homelessness is complex by definition. There isn't a one-size-fits-all quick fix. We would have engaged with him, got him to a point where we could perhaps offer him accommodation at our direct access hostel, and then he would join us, he'd be booked in, and he would be given a room, and we would seek to allocate a key worker to work with him. That could be relating to health issues, could be relating to finding some sort of training or education. It could be ensuring that the state is paying him the appropriate benefit.
One of the biggest things we have to do with a lot of our clients when they move in is they may have lost hope, they've stopped trusting anyone. They may have been treated horrendously while they're on the streets. They no longer feel they have any identity. Their self-esteem, their confidence is absolutely through the floor. And I think, as Alan just said, we do a lot of support work. Sometimes the very first stage of that support is just sitting and having a coffee and a chat so that they can trust us. It's good when you finally get that rapport with a client and all of a sudden they can come through and they'll go, oh, morning, lovely to see you, how are you today? And they see that as a normal conversation. They always say to us, they know that we care. And that's so important to them, that they just know there is someone there who cares after them being on the street.
How do you see that relationship develop when somebody comes in and for them perhaps being seen and being acknowledged in a positive way is not an everyday experience for them, and they come in and that begins to happen.
Again, if we go back to John's story, the changes we started to notice with John were his first day, every time he left, he wouldn't look us in the eye, he'd be hidden under his coat, he'd be mumbling. Second, third time, there's a little bit of eye contact. Third time he came in, when everything started to slot into place, all of a sudden, once everything went into place with John, there was this amazing young man with the biggest smile on his face that lights a room up. And it is that going from I'm invisible, I don't exist, to hello, it's me. It's so hard to put a word to how that feels when that change happens. But sometimes it's just a small change. Sometimes, you know, we have some clients who are very mistrustful for good reason sometimes, and sometimes just the fact that they've gone from not saying a word to all of a sudden after two or three words just saying hello, good morning, that might be it.
So this is a slow process that must sometimes feel a bit like one step forward, two steps back. And I wonder, what's that like for you as workers?
You know, we're human beings. We get upset, we get frustrated, certainly with John going back. And only recently I've had this discussion with John, and he didn't realise how chaotic he actually was. But when he first came into us, because of his substance use and the chaos he was in, staff used to dread knocking on his door to do welfare checks. He was at such high risk of overdosing.
Okay.
And the risk was going in to check on him and finding that he'd overdosed during the night. But we laugh with them, we cry with them. Of course, we sometimes get angry with them. We're working with a fellow human being, and we want every client to have a happy ending, but we have to be realistic. It's not always going to happen, which is, like I say, we have to allow them to make mistakes. And that's the time when you want to bang your head against a wall, but it just might not be the right time. If we look at John's journey, that's been a 3-year journey. We can't work miracles. We don't have magic wands.
So tell me about some of the times where there have been steps backward.
When John first came into service, bearing in mind he'd been with us previously, he was asked very straightforwardly how he would like his visit this time to be different, on the basis that if he continued to follow the path that he had previously, the outcome would probably be the same. He would be asked to leave. We believe that individuals have hopeful futures. We believe, actually, that if somebody has to leave our service or one of our services, they haven't failed. It's just that they're not ready to engage with our service for whatever reason. And we hope that the way in which they leave us, hopefully with some dignity, certainly from our perspective, though individuals may behave differently, be angry and so on, which is entirely understandable, that at some point they will feel they can come back to us. So coming back to John, we asked him how he would like this visit to end.
So I just want to be clear. So John had been with you previously.
He had been.
He hadn't been at the right stage to engage with the service, and he had been asked to leave, obviously with the possibility of coming back at a later stage. Okay.
Yeah.
So he was back for a second time.
Third time.
Okay.
And it's a difficult question to ask somebody, but yeah. To just so that we're kind of keeping things very real, how would you like your journey to end? And he responded with, I want to try and stop using, or words to that effect. So to do that is a major decision for an individual. It requires a great deal of risk-taking on their part because they're somewhat having to revisit all their old thoughts and their old behaviours and so on, and they need to feel they can trust individuals and feel ready. After a few weeks of frustrating stops and starts for all parties, he engaged with the local drug and alcohol service. Over time, we supported him to attend appointments and gave him reminders, encouragement, and so on. And he got to a point where he could be stable on his script. But whilst he was in that process, there's a term that's used, withdrawal. And it's a most unpleasant journey for the individual. It is physically traumatic. It's mentally traumatic. This is where, as support workers, we have to become almost care workers to a degree. Bed linen was clean, making sure clothing was clean, that there was some dignity and self-respect was maintained.
To do the job we do, you either can do it or you can't do it. Within this job, you can go in full of the joys of the world in the morning, and throughout the course of the day, you can go through every type of emotion. I've gone out the back of the hostel and screamed at times. I've gone out the back of the hostel and kicked walls. I've cried. I've gone home and lain awake at night. We were waiting to get him into the dry house, and John himself knew that one of his biggest issues was he was getting paid. Now, a lot of our clients have triggers. John knew that the day he received his benefit was his biggest trigger. So he was due to receive his benefit on the Monday night at midnight. He was due to go on the Tuesday and have his first test for the dry house. So I'd left him in really good spirits on the Monday when I left work. And I said, right, I will see you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I think I was taking him off to a football match or something. He'd started to engage with football. And I lay awake most of that night thinking, please don't. He'd handed his bank card into staff to try and remove that. Temptation. And I lay awake half the night thinking, oh, please, please, please let him not have gone to the bank. Let him not have gone to the bank. In work for 7:30, and my first question to the morning staff is John in? And they said, yeah, he hasn't been out all night. And I was like, a weight lifts off your shoulders. And it's hard to explain, you know, that this is a client. This young man was a chaotic heroin user, but that was an enormous, enormous challenge for him to overcome. And when he came through and I said, how did you sleep? And he said, not very well. And I said, no, me neither. And he said, why? And I said, I was so worried about you. And he said, you don't have, oh no, please don't lie awake thinking about me. I said, I can't help it. And it was so strange, him realising that I'd lain awake for half the night worrying about him, and why should I do that? It's just because I'm a human being and I know how important this was. And the smile on his face when he walked in and said, I've done it. You can't describe it, can you? I had tears in my eyes. Alan was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And when he saw our reaction to that, I think that's when he, I don't know, how would you describe it? It was just, my God, these people really do care.
One of the things that illicit substance tends to do is to dull the senses. So that awareness of seeing in other people that sort of encouragement, that happiness, that sort of care, the person feels it for the first time. Mm. And it's quite moving.
You have to be a human being to do this job, and that is, and part of that is accepting the bad stuff along with the good stuff. Everyone says it's the person you care about that always gets full guns, both barrels blazing if you're having a bad day. Mm. Well, for our clients, we are that person. Mm. So let's say John's come in, he's had a bad day, he's bitten my head off. I'm not going to go and challenge him then and there. I'm going to leave it a while and then go and say, okay, what's going on? What just happened earlier on? I was only asking if you were okay, and all of a sudden you've bitten my head. Oh, I'm really sorry this happened today. Don't take it personally. When I first started doing this job, I took it very personally.
Okay.
And I would go home and so I can't do this job. Someone called me a see you next Tuesday today. But eventually, you know, working with the client group, I have bad days. I shout and scream at people sometimes. You know, ask my husband, I'm sure he'll agree. You have to be prepared to get on your hands and knees and scrub. You have to be prepared to put up with the good, the bad, the ugly, and the highs and the lows. We work with an amazing team and we support each other.
There's a training concept known as motivational interviewing.
Yeah,
and one of the terms is rolling with resistance. Rolling with resistance can be quite challenging for all, but it really works.
Tell me about rolling with resistance. I like the sound of that.
John is a very intelligent young man. He is also very opinionated. He's also very reserved, very quiet, and he can be quite a difficult person to reach, as it were. He needs space. I would suggest there were occasions when, how shall we put it, there was a serious need for some domestic hygiene improvement. Lots of really dirty, grubby clothing, bedding, etc. One of the issues with individuals who are intravenous users is they're not always safe with the disposal of their sharps, their needles, their syringes. And if you go into a room where that is a possible risk, there is the potential, if you're not very careful, of needle stick injury. So one of the agreements that I had with John was that I'll do your laundry for you, but I need you to check to make sure it's safe. And initially, he was a bit reluctant to do that. And as a consequence, the dirty laundry just accumulated.
Mm-hmm.
And then a point was reached where he then decided to put it together, sort through piles. So the resistance would have been the not being prepared to engage with gathering, you know, because in effect I was offering him room service in the sense of, you know, this, we will, you know, I'll be your housekeeping, you know, I'll clean your room and all that sort of thing. Wasn't at all interested. So, as I say, a point was reached where he started to gather a few things together, a little bit tidier, was a little more agreeable to placing sharps that have been discarded in appropriate places, in bins and so on, in his room. We provided a fairly large bin because he was using a great deal of substance at that time.
Yeah.
And over time, matter of weeks, we got into a routine, and the wonderful thing was when the offer was there, he knew the offer was always there, but he declined it. And said, no, I'll do it. Now, for some clients, that's a sort of, just leave me alone. Then he asked to do the laundry.
Where is he at now?
He's living in our new dry house facility. He's loving it there. He calls it home. And the first time he said, I've actually got a home, Nikki. I've got a front door with a key and it feels like home. That smile is still on his face. He's a very proud young man of where he is today, the challenges he's faced. He knows it's early days. He totally acknowledges that. But I think last time I went to see him, I made a comment to him about the state of his room. goodness sake, you need to get this room sorted out. And he went, oh, I know. And I said, let me pay you a compliment, John. I said, because 6 months ago, the issue would have been exactly as Alan just said, the health and safety with the needles. I said, what's wrong now, John? I said, you now live, instead of living in an addict's bedroom, you're now living in a teenage boy's bedroom. And I don't actually know which is worse, the smell of socks. And he thought that was hilarious. He just saw the absolutely funny side and how much of a positive that actually was. I wasn't telling him off because his room was dangerous. I was laughing. If we go back to when he started having issues, he was around 19. Quite often we see that there's a developmental barrier comes in. So although he's 27, some of his behaviour is very much that of a 19-year-old. But that's brilliant. I think Alan would agree. I'd rather say to John, for God's sake, sort your sinky socks out, please. Rather than here's a yellow bin, let's get rid of 300 needles that might be dangerous. But like I say, he's in an amazing place.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
That is a tough job. Not one you just do for the money.
No, definitely not.
So, Susie, you worked at a night shelter.
I did it was about 18 years ago for one summer when I was a student.
Ah, two things spring to mind there. You must have been a very mature student.
Yes. It's so rude. Just always so rude.
And it was so tough. You only lasted one summer.
That was the plan. It was just a summer job while I was studying, yeah. And it was a postgraduate thing, actually, Claire, thank you. So anyway.
She stayed a student as long as she could.
Yeah, I did. Clearly a lot has changed since I was there. And as Alan explained, a night shelter is an old term. They're now called a direct access hostel.
Oh, well, it's good to know the up-to-date lingo,
It was like to know, yeah. Yeah, when I was there, they felt pretty basic. People were turned out in the morning and places were allocated very much on a first-come, first-served basis. But I think now that this kind of first stage hostel is more about resolving or helping to resolve the issues why someone became homeless in the first place and to try to get them to a point of stability and then get a plan to move on into further accommodation.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, I know when you spoke to me after the interview, you mentioned that Nikki didn't know at the start that she would be able to hack it. There was an incident, wasn't there, where a client had a knife and she sat with him. Yeah. It sounds as though she dealt with it really well. But then at the end of her shift, she went home shaking and doubted whether she could carry on.
Yeah, and I was quite reassured, really, that she had struggled to begin with because it is really hard what they do. And both Nikki and Alan just had so much compassion and just, you know, sheer perseverance, really.
So that's, I can imagine one of the main skills is perseverance.
Yeah, I think kind of so. Just being able to stick with it.
So motivational interviewing, rolling with resistance. That was a tool that Alan talked about as one that he uses a lot. I assume that you could tell us all about that, Susie.
I've been doing what I love to do and reading up around it. So if you think about, you know, where somebody that is just being very resistant to making any kind of changes, denying that there's a problem, refusing to do anything about it. And I suppose the natural inclination is to badger them and explain why they should be doing it and keep pushing them. But actually, with rolling with resistance, you recognize that if you do that, you might just kind of push them further away, drive them deeper into their shell, make them defensive. So you kind of avoid that direct head-on argument.
Okay, I think I might be able to use this with my three-year-old. Yeah, carry on.
Definitely a good plan. You kind of encourage them to come up with possible solutions. You don't try to force suggestions on them.
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying. And people probably would be expecting criticism. So this is a sort of, this might be a quite unusual response for them to have.
Yeah, kind of expecting criticism and challenge. So actually, you're not doing that, and that's quite disarming.
And so what is the end point that you're trying to achieve? Are you trying to get them to realise the issue themselves?
What you're aiming to do is to get them to recognise where there's a discrepancy between what they want to achieve and their behaviour at the moment. So, you know, if somebody, let's take it out of the homelessness situation, if somebody's overall aim is perhaps to lose weight, and that's something that they've stated, and then
they're constantly saying, but I just can't because
I like, just can't, I just
love food, yeah.
Yeah, or what...
This is starting to turn into a real conversation.
This is like a confessional. Yeah. I just love panettone too much.
Christmas is coming and I'm not sure what I'm going to be able to do.
But it's just kind of getting people to, or allowing people to recognise them for themselves, that discrepancy between where they want to be and what their current behaviour is doing. And also kind of giving them the time to do that, you know, maybe asking what an alternative viewpoint might be.
Yeah, it's very interesting because quite often we try and find a solution for people all the time, don't we? And this is obviously a way of actually just talking around things and somebody hopefully coming to their own solution by the sound of it.
And recognising that that might not happen in that conversation. I think it is one of those tools that you can see yourself using in real life.
Yeah, so it's useful, actually.
In real life, in everyday life,
Very good.
Try it with some teenagers.
Anything else you want to say about Nicky and Alan?
No, just a reminder that we'll put links in the show notes to St Martin's and to national helping agencies.
Brilliant. Okay, time for our podcast recommendation. Rather than recommending a whole podcast, we've recently started recommending like particular episodes, as we've found that often is a good way to get into something that's already established. There are those where you need to start at the beginning, like the mighty third season of Serial, which we've been raving about, but others where you can just pick it up at any point.
Today's recommendation comes from a listener, so thank you very much for that. It's This American Life, the godfather of podcasts.
Oh, we have to keep going back there and dipping back in.
Absolutely. It's an episode that is dated November the 23rd, 2012, and it's called Little War on the Prairie, and it's about the site of the largest mass execution in US history and why people in Minnesota don't talk about it. So Christmas Day today. So that means that our next episode will be going out on New Year's Day, a week
today.
That's
right, with just the festive perineum in between.
Nice.
If you find yourself on the sofa surrounded by people who still don't know what a podcast is, then do us a favour and tell them and get them sorted on their phone or
Absolutely.
Download it. Get those older generation listening to podcasts because they would love them.
Yep, definitely. Please do. That will be a big help. We'll be back next week, which is also next year, with a brand new backstory. New Year's Day, a very easy one to remember. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are the Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at the Backstory Pod on Twitter. Search for the Backstory with Claire and Susie in your podcast directory.
For sponsorship opportunities, or if you'd like to take part in a show, please contact hello@thebackstorypodcast.co.uk. The Backstory Podcast is produced by Tin Shed Productions.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.